Joining us now, Mark Brenner, director of the Detroit-based Labor Notes, labornotes.org. Mark, welcome to the morning show.
Great to be here.
I was reading some of your posts here, and you speak for me when you talk about the big three bailouts, proposed bailout in Detroit. These people have so mismanaged the car industry. Should have been focused on hybrids and alternatives when they were putting out gas guzzlers and Hummers and SUVs. And why reward that, although we need to help our workers and those in tangential industries?
Well, I think that's exactly the contradiction we got to wrestle with here, which is that, look, why should the people who work for these companies, who know that these managers are idiots, pay the price? They've been saying for years that the problems exist. They've been trying to work to correct them. And what do they get rewarded with? Well, they get rewarded with getting squeezed on the job, and now with potentially their retirement and their whole economic future getting flushed down the toilet. I think we need a real big move here on the part of the federal government, and it seems to me that we can't just play same old, or, you know, business as usual politics here. We really need to think about how we can reshape not just the auto industry or auto production, but how can we actually meet our transportation needs in a way that can keep the planet alive for the next century?
You know, the Democrats are floating this idea, Mark, excuse me, of in return for loans, having a government stake in the companies. Is that a proper way to go if you don't eliminate the bad management at the same time? Or what strings would you attach to any federal government bailout?
Yeah, you know, there was a joke about this when they were talking about bailing out the banks, right? This is Goldman Sachs socialism. We basically take the risk on the public's shoulders without getting any say over what happens at the top. And I think that we really need to kind of turn that around. I mean, if we're going to take control, if we're going to take a stake in these companies, we need to take effective control of them. And I think that means really pushing the factories in the Midwest to be doing a very, very different set of things. And that includes pushing in the way you were saying towards hybrids and other kinds of more environmentally sustainable transportation production. But it could even go beyond that. I was talking with an auto worker yesterday who believes that the plant he works in could actually be part of production of the blades for wind turbines, and that it wouldn't really take a lot of retooling to take his axle plant and put it to a completely different use. But that's not going to happen if we leave the decisions in the hands of the people who got us into this mess.
You know, it's interesting because the conservative right wing is talking about how this would be a bailout. If we did enact this bailout, it would be a bailout of the United Auto Workers Union, not a bailout of the auto companies. They're blaming this on union wages and union benefits and union pensions, which obviously from our side of the aisle we think is ridiculous. But what about the idea of partial ownership? I mean, isn't that the way why Toyota has such is so much more profitable and mobile than we are, that they do get subsidized by the government?
Well, I don't know if we can make a case for that. I mean, clearly different countries like Japan and Germany have taken a very, very different approach to kind of research and development historically. There's a huge debate about that around, you know, aircraft production and what the Europeans did to create Airbus. Mm-hmm. I don't actually think at this stage that really getting into those debates is going to help us. What we do need to do, however, is think about the fact that the auto industry executives have just reaped tremendous benefits for three generations and left us in this sorry state, and they've got their money. But the people that actually worked in these plants, the people who were the ones, you know, risking life and limb sometimes going into work and definitely coming out more tired, if not injured at the end of the day, are now facing their whole economic future in jeopardy, and I don't think that's fair. And I was talking with somebody who also is not a worker in Detroit yesterday about this exact problem, and he was saying, "Isn't it hysterical that the companies have figured out a way to redirect consumer frustration with their, you know, poor quality and bad design towards the UAW, towards people who actually have a decent job?"
Right.
You know what we have here, and you pointed this out, what the companies have done. They dug their own hole, and they then shift the debt onto off the books and onto the workers and the taxpayers. That's what they do. You know, pension, we don't have pension plans anymore. We have this move to 401ks. We have a veritable assault on the unions, and yet it's laughable, as Christine says, that the right wing claims that the UAW is responsible for management's failures.
Sure, they loved selling you a 401k when the stock market was going up 15% a year in the 1990s, and now all of a sudden that everything's in free fall, they're like, oops. You know, they broke it and we bought it. It's a shell game, and we need to turn the tables on it. We need to say no mas.
You know what I think is another interesting aspect to this is the issue of health care, you know, and how health care costs are so interwoven with the economy and with jobs. And I believe it was just earlier this week GM said that they were having to pull back on their lifetime health coverage for retired pensioners, and that was sort of an untouchable thing in the past. But now that these people who thought they had lifetime coverage as retirees won't have health coverage anymore, and so this idea of some sort of a single payer health care system or something like that would protect people in those situations where these companies like GM wouldn't have this huge overhead of health care costs, and it would save money in the long term for the American taxpayer.
Oh, that's absolutely right, Christine. What you've got here is you've got a situation. Just take General Motors. They spend $5 billion a year to cover health care costs for their active and retired workers. They provide health care for over 1 million people between the workers and their families. And yet, they pay more money, in fact, for health care than they do for steel. And yet, they are completely unwilling to actually do anything serious to change the game on healthcare policy in this country. They give a tepid nod towards some sort of universal coverage, but in the end of the day, instead of actually getting those benefits here in the United States, they move their factories to Canada, where they actually have a single-payer system. And why do they justify it? Precisely because healthcare costs are much lower there.
Yeah, amazing. Mark Brenner's our guest. He's director of the Detroit-based Labor Notes. LaborNotes.org is the website. I want to go back to something you said, because we talked on this show often about how real wages have declined over the decades and at least remain stagnant. And you have pointed out in a recent post that, and I want people to hear this, that in 1978, the average wage for production workers was $16 an hour in today's dollars. In 2007, the average was still $16. And you look at what correspondingly CEO pay has gone to 27 times what the average worker made in 1973 to 275 times what the average maker made in 2007. It's just unbelievable.
That's right. I mean, that's why this we've been talking a lot about this economic crisis that we just entered into and the financial meltdown in exactly those terms. We cannot look at this as something that just happened yesterday, that just happened this summer, or that just happened last year. This is something that was 30 years in the making. If you're going to squeeze the working population of this country for a whole generation, eventually you're going to hit a wall, and that's exactly what happened with the mortgage crisis. This was not about people who were irresponsible taking loans. They were just stretched to the limit.
Yeah. Real wages went down under Ronald Reagan, and people don't, they just don't get that. Mark Brenner is our guest director of the Detroit-based Labor Notes. Mark, the bailout of the big three, I was saying this morning that I don't think this president, George Bush, in his last couple months in office is going to sign a bill which will do what the Democrats are talking about, getting a government stake in the companies. If that is so, how do you think that the new Democratic, the enlarged Democratic majorities in the House and Senate and President Obama would structure this?
Look, unfortunately, Republican, Democrat, there's a culture in Washington that is going to basically take incremental measures, that is going to move slow, that is not going to think big. And that only changes when people raise hackles, when we get out in the streets, when we actually make our voices heard on what we need. And here, as I said before, we need a game changer. We cannot approach these problems piecemeal. We cannot just look at this as how we save these three companies. We have to think about what a transportation system for the 21st century needs to look like, and get the government to
Barack Obama has been talking about making the car of the future here in Detroit.
Well, let's hope that he's serious about that. But it can't just be about making cars. We also have to think about alternatives to cars, light rail, small mass transit.
Yep.
Hell, we even have all kinds of alternatives that we could look to other countries for in the way of individual transportation that's non-gasoline-based.
Absolutely. And, you know, if someone's going to think big, it's Barack Obama. And let's hope that those bold ideas, bold strokes will be implemented as best possible when he is president. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. Mark Brenner has been our guest director of the Detroit-based Labor Notes, labornotes.org. Mark, thanks a million.
Great to be here.
Okay, thanks a billion, I should say. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Mark.
You're listening to the KPOJ Morning Podcast, heard weekday morning 6 to 9 on AM 620 KPOJ.
Well, it's time for Mystery Button, a service of EvolveFish.com. Get all your progressive buttons from EvolveFish.com. And here's the clue for today's Mystery Button, by the way, 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620 or #620 on your AT&T wireless phone. The clue today, this right-wing congressman tried to tie the Clintons to the death of Vince Foster. He actually believed that Vince Foster was murdered, and even... this guy even reenacted the crime, the alleged crime, in his backyard with his own gun and using a pumpkin for Vince Foster's head. So this is a loony bird. As a matter of fact, he's still in Congress. He won again on Tuesday. This right-wing congressman tried to tie the Clintons to the death of Vince Foster. 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. Or #620 on your AT&T wireless phone.
Is the button shaped like a pumpkin?
No.
No?
And I have it near my heart, so it better not be a target today. But no, he's a real piece of work, this one. If you know, give us a call. By the way, yesterday we played Don't It Turn Your Red States Blue, which was a takeoff on Crystal Gayle's, a parody of Crystal Gayle's Don't It Make My Brown Eyes Blue, which I've been singing for the last 24 hours. Thank you, Paul.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I got it in my head. But we received an email from Sari, who wrote us that it is written and performed by Suzanne Rand, who is one half of the comedy team Monteith and Rand, and just a great comedian. So Suzanne Rand was the composer. Not composer, but a writer and performer of Don't It Turn Your Red States Blue. So thank you very much for that. Let's do Day in History. It is November 13th today. And Christine, what's happened?
That's right. On this day in 1789, Benjamin Franklin wrote in a letter to a friend, quote, "In this world, nothing can be said to be certain except death and taxes."
Franklin said a lot of wonderful
things,
didn't he?
Yes.
In 1927, the Holland Tunnel opens, linking New Jersey to New York City.
In 1940, the Walt Disney animated movie Fantasia had its world premiere in New York.
Brilliant.
And in 1956, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down laws calling for racial segregation on public city and state buses.
In 1969, on November 13th, anti-war protesters in Washington stage a symbolic march against death. And in 1971, Mariner 9 becomes the first spacecraft to orbit another planet, swinging into trajectory around Mars.
In 1974, Karen Silkwood, a technician and union activist at the Carr-McGee Cimarron plutonium plant near Crescent, Oklahoma, died in a car crash while on her way to meet a reporter. And on this day in 1982, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial was dedicated on the National Mall in Washington, D.C.
Designed by Maya Lin.
So brilliant.
You ever see that documentary? One best documentary. Maya Lin,
yes,
Strong, Clear Vision.
It was good.
Brilliant. Brilliant. People should
remember
see that. Yes.
How controversial it was at the
time? Oh, absolutely. She was a student.
Yes.
And an Asian student. An American student, but of Asian descent. And a lot of people hated this design. And she stood up for herself all the way through it. And if you've been there, it is one of the most touching memorials. You can physically touch it and feel it. So Maya Lin,
yeah.
A Strong, Clear Vision. In 1994, voters in Sweden say yes to the European Union.
And in 2003, Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore, who had refused to remove his granite Ten Commandments monument from the state courthouse, was thrown off the bench, yay, by a judicial ethics panel for having, quote, placed himself above the law.
Okay, let's see if we can get this loony and named on our Mystery Button. Larry and Camus, who's your guest, Larry?
Is it congressman from Georgia, Rogue?
No, it is not. Interesting guest. Scott in Portland, who's your guest?
Dan Burton.
Who?
Dan Burton.
You are right, Scott. Thank you. It is Dan Burton out of Indiana. You hold on for your KPOJ prize pack. Tell you more when we come back.
Thanks for listening to the KPOJ Morning Podcast. Remember to download the daily edition and listen live weekday morning 6 to 9. AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's progressive talk station.